Thank you, Steve. Yes, Bill, you're going to need some headphones today.
I'll probably need headphones today, Wendy. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's Bill Left. It's Wendy Snyder. We're 312-981-7200. Rarely do we start the show by having a guest in studio right away, but his schedule is such that if we wanted to talk to Daniel Biss, who's running for governor, we had to open the show with him, so why not? Daniel, how are you? Nice to see you.
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you?
Very, very good.
Thank you for coming on. I have to be honest with you. You are not from my district. I don't know much about you, and I think there are some other people like that, and we'd like to find out a little bit more about you. So thank you for coming up, first and foremost.
Glad to be here.
I have an 18-year-old son who just registered to vote in the primary.
Congratulations.
And he's kind of excited about
That's awesome.
And I said, you know, the weird thing about the primary is you have to pick a side, basically. You have to say Democrat or Republican. Why? Do you have any idea? Because I really...
Yeah, I mean, here's the theory, and you can like it or not, and I've got mixed feelings, to be honest, but here's the theory. The theory is the Democratic Party should decide internally who is the best representative of their values and approach, and the Republican Party internally decides the same thing. Like, in a lot of countries, they don't even have primary elections at all, just the party bosses decide.
And then they put someone up, and then
now,
the public votes.
In Illinois, when the party bosses get to decide, everything goes to hell. And so that's not the best way forward. And, you know, I think having open primaries would make more sense. But the idea is, you know, let's allow the Democrats to pick amongst themselves who the best Democrat is. Let the Republicans pick amongst themselves who the best Republican is. And then they can all fight it out for the rest of the summer and fall.
That makes sense when you explain it that way.
Wendy and I have discussed this many times, Daniel, in the past. Why would anyone want to be president? Why would anyone want to be governor? Why would anyone want to be a senator? Why do you want to be governor?
Well, I'm running for governor because I think this is a totally unique time. I think that between Trump and Rauner, between the pain that people are experiencing across the country and across the state, and between the fact that we get to, just as what we were just discussing, Wendy, decide what the future of the Democratic Party is, what is the soul of the Democratic Party, we've got a real generational chance to fix Illinois. I mean, let's be honest. This state has been in real trouble, not just for 3 years with Bruce Rauner, but for decades before that. And I think this is a really unique moment in our politics to do some good.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm running. I don't have any illusions. It's a hard job running. You get beat up a lot. It's a
thankless,
complicated
job.
Weird thing to do, but I think it's a chance to make a real difference, and I think this is a unique time of all times to make a profound difference for Illinois, and I just didn't want to walk away from that.
Yeah, good.
And what's so unique about this, unfortunately, with the tragedies, with the shootings in Parkland, Florida, these kids want to make a difference now. So kids are becoming so politically active. I mean, I'm telling you, when I first voted, I didn't know. I didn't care. Yeah. Who's better looking? It's seriously, it's completely different now.
Yeah, well, thank God for me. They're no longer voting on who's better looking. Hello, radio. But you know, I totally agree with you, Wendy. And, you know, to be honest, the younger generation gets kind of a bad rap for
totally.
Not being engaged, for being self-absorbed, for not being
They're more engaged than we ever were.
I totally agree with you. And they're not always engaged. And actually, I don't mean to keep going back to your first question, but it was such a perfect intro, Wendy. They're not necessarily engaged in partisan politics. They're not always sure when they look at the options that there's somebody who's matches their values. And so sometimes they engage in issue advocacy or organizing or protesting because the political system isn't really up to the standards of someone who wants to use it as a tool to make lives better. But I think this younger generation is very invested in making the world better. And I think we, as people in politics, have a responsibility to give them something worth voting for, not just someone to vote against.
In the past week, Daniel, a lot of people have drawn a line from politicians to the money that they take from the NRA. What are your thoughts on that? What should be the rule, or should there be a rule about campaign contributions coming from the NRA?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I've got, you know, I don't brag about F grades too often, but I got a lifetime F from the NRA.
Yeah.
And I've certainly never taken a dime from the NRA, and I never would.
Yeah.
Let me tell you two things. First of all, about the NRA, their money is powerful and dangerous, and I certainly feel really strongly about that. But more powerful than their money is the fact that there are people around the country who listen to the NRA, people who say, hey, Daniel got an F, so you should vote against him. And that person then votes against me without actually looking under the hood to figure out what I did that earned me that F. And here's why this is important. Some of the things that we are trying to do, like universal background checks, like licensing gun dealers so they aren't allowed to keep on selling guns to people who aren't supposed to have them, to make sure that people with mental illness and certain types of criminal records can't have guns, most gun owners support those changes too.
Right.
But the gun manufacturers who bankroll the NRA, mm-hmm. they oppose it because they just want to sell more guns to everybody. And so what we got to do is drive a wedge between the gun owners who right now are listening to the NRA and therefore voting against people who want to make reasonable common sense changes, and the gun manufacturers who bankroll them.
Yeah.
But to back up to the bigger question, our campaign finance system is really scary. And I think this primary we've got on March 20th is a referendum on that. J.B. Pritzker spent $56 million of his own money already on this primary. $56 million, that's more money than Donald Trump spent to get nominated president.
Yeah.
And so we've got to decide, do we want to have an election or do we want to have an auction? Do we want to have a Democratic nominee based on money or based on people? And I think that's a really important decision, not just for right now, but for the long-term trajectory of working people, of middle-class families like mine, and of the values of the Democratic Party.
Senator Bishop, Steve upstairs, speaking of that money, it's been targeted at you more than ever in the past 10 days or so, right? I see you smiling a little bit. Have made a move in the polls, and now people are sort of coming after you. Tell me about the shift in the campaign since it's shown that you're starting to do a little bit better.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting that, you know, you mentioned in American politics, it's sometimes a thankless task. And the way you know you're doing well is when they start punching you in the face. Yeah. So J.B. Pritzker is now spending millions of dollars with kind of desperate attack ads against me. It's what happens when a billionaire is freaked out about a middle-class progressive, because he knows that if the people of Illinois are making an even choice between a billionaire and a middle-class progressive, he doesn't have a chance. So I take his panic as a good sign, and I take the surge that we've had in the polls as a good sign, and we've got 29 days left to close this out.
Well, and other than, what do you make of the controversy at the Reader and the ouster of the editor over the weekend about that cartoon of Pritzker on the cover?
Well, I certainly found that cartoon to also be pretty offensive.
Can you explain the cartoon really quickly?
Mark Kunkel got the job just, 10 days ago?
Yeah.
On the Reader, yeah. And Steve, would you like to tell us about the cover of that?
I mean, Senator, you can fill us in too, but it had to do with the recordings of Pritzker and Blagojevich and talking about the black vote and different black figures and things, and they had a lawn jockey on the cartoon. I guess there even was some talk, there's reporting that they might have put Pritzker in blackface, but Ed Eisendrath, who took over the Sun-Times, and then the Reader not too long ago finally parted ways with Kunkel after just a few weeks in the job.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, let's just back up a second, right? There were tapes released a couple weeks ago of Pritzker talking to Rod Blagojevich, these two powerful white men trying to figure out what the African-American community was going to be given by them instead of what the African-American community would demand for itself. And, you know, Pritzker said things like, well, you know, you should appoint Jesse White to the Senate. He's the least offensive African-American. And a lot of people in the African-American community, but others, myself included, were pretty offended by that. But the response is not to use more inflammatory language. I think the response is to actually talk about how to build an inclusive politics,
sure,
where you're not going to wind up with, you know, powerful white guys using African-Americans as pawns on a chessboard.
Yep. Daniel Biss is here. He wants to be your governor. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions or comments. We'll pick it up in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We are talking politics, something we don't do very frequently. Illinois Democratic candidate for governor Daniel Biss in the studio with us. I had said something to you off the air about you mentioned all the money that Mr. Pritzker has spent on his campaign. To me, I'm listening to that, and it's like, do you need all the bells and whistles? Isn't that kind of a waste of money?
Well, I can't speak to his strategy, but here's what money can buy you. It can buy you a lot of television commercials. It can buy you fancy, glossy mailers. It can hire an entire army of people who are paid to go door to door. It can't buy passion. It can't buy commitment. It can't buy people who actually believe in a cause. And it can't buy you a progressive record to stand on either. And so listen, if dollars or votes, we're going to lose. But if passion turns into votes, I feel pretty good about where this is going to go. And I think we've got to ask ourselves, and I say this as a Democrat, as Democrats, we've got to ask ourselves, listen, Bruce Rauner is an inexperienced billionaire who became a governor and failed. Donald Trump is an inexperienced billionaire who became president, and I sure think he's failing. So Democrats, we should decide, do we want to try that too? Are we going to say, if you can't beat him, join him? We need our own inexperienced billionaire. Or are we going to find a different way forward? Are we going to build a campaign based on what people need, how communities can band together and build a new politics? I don't think it's a hard choice, but we've got 29 days left to see what the people think.
And you do need to register to vote. I don't remember when the deadline is for the primary.
Well, you actually, now we've passed good laws. You can vote. You can register at the polling place on Election Day. But in the meantime, you might want to go to, for example, the Cook County Clerk website, or perhaps the Chicago Board of Elections website, and get all the full information about all the different ways of registering and voting and all the different deadlines. We try to make it as easy as possible for folks to vote, but there's still people who don't make it to the polls, so check out that information.
You mentioned Governor Rauner, and I know that we've been hearing Governor Rauner complain about Mike Madigan, and one of our callers has a question about just that. Christy, you have a question for Daniel Biss?
Yes, thank you, Wendy. I feel even the greatest of candidates with the right passion and the right oomph who wants to make Illinois better, even that person's hands are going to be tied by somebody like Mike Madigan. What is your plan? And I know it's a long answer and kind of a loaded question, but what's your plan to deal with him?
Well, it's a great question, Christy, and I'm going to try to give a concise answer, but it's real important. I mean, listen, Rauner went to Springfield and just fought and fought and fought with Madigan, and those two men bickered with each other and nothing happened and the rest of us got hurt, and that's not a good way forward. But then clear on the opposite end of the spectrum, you've got Pritzker, who's just Madigan's candidate. And they, you know, they put their arm around each other and they're marching forward together, shoulder to shoulder. And that's not going to change anything from what's gone wrong in Springfield for the last 35 years since Mike Madigan became speaker. My view is this. Mike Madigan's been there too long. He's too powerful. That power has held back the state of Illinois and, in my opinion, the Democratic Party. I've said that for a long time. Mm-hmm. One of the first things I did when I got to the House in 2011 was I put in a constitutional amendment that says you can't serve as speaker for more than 10 years because I think that longevity is a lot of the problem. And I've got my feet firmly planted in the opposite wing of the Democratic Party from the Madigan-Pritzker wing of the party. But I also, in Springfield, have worked with everyone, Democrats and Republicans, senators and representatives, people from my progressive wing of the party and people from the Madigan-Pritzker wing of the Democratic Party. And what I've done in doing that is I've been willing to do give and take, and I've also been able to come to the table with a strong political base of my own that's independent that can apply pressure. So I don't walk into Mike Madigan's office and say, hey, I'm Daniel, I'd like to do this. I say, I'm Daniel, and there's hundreds of thousands of people standing with me around the state of Illinois, and here's what we need. That's a governor who can actually get something done.
It's a great answer. Christy, you
Thanks,
pleased
Christy.
With that?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Christy.
Daniel, one of the knocks on you has been your thoughts on pension reform. You're a former teacher, and yet even knowing that, you wouldn't mind seeing their pension pulled a bit, right? So how do you explain that? I'm surprised by it a little bit.
Well, so this has been the most important learning experience of my career. When I got to Springfield in 2011, we were in the depths of a recession and huge budget problems, huge pension debt. And my preferred solution at the time, just like it is now, was to have a progressive income tax, tax the wealthy fairly, and use that money to fund our pension systems and our priorities. But what we got told by the conventional wisdom was you can't do that until you've made changes to pensions or further cuts to social services. And I was too quick, I'll admit it. I was too quick to fall for that false choice and pick what I thought was the least bad of the bad options. And that bill was overturned by the Supreme Court, which was the right thing. Now, I was in the arena trying in my own way to tackle an important problem, and I didn't do it the right way. And now I'm still in the arena trying in the right way, the constitutional way, the fair way, the just way to address that same problem. And I'm being beaten up by J.B. Pritzker with all these television commercials.
Yeah.
What's frustrating about it is that back then, he was funding the effort to do away with pensions altogether. He was writing $10,000 checks all the time to the same group that was trying to get rid of pensions, that was attacking me from the right. And he hasn't admitted that. He hasn't acknowledged it. He's just being a hypocrite. He's just engaging in politics. And what I think we need is someone who's been in the arena, has had to make those tough calls, has made good calls and also calls he's needed to learn from, and is ready to make tough choices as governor.
So just to be clear, you've changed your mind on it a bit, but where do you stand? Like, if it came up for a vote today, let's say you were the governor and they were talking about pension, how would you vote on it?
Oh, exactly? I would vote against not only the bill that we've talked about that was passed in 2013, but I've voted against a series of pension changes since then, including ones pushed by Democrats, because, frankly, I'm committed to doing this the right way, the constitutional way, the fair way.
Okay.
And the Constitution is clear that we should not make unilateral changes to pension benefits. And there are other fair constitutional ways to do it that don't touch people's benefits. Mm-hmm. Ways like consolidating the 600 different fire and police pension funds across the state of Illinois. So we've got 600 different pension funds. You and I live in Evanston. They've got two pension funds there. And you live in LaGrange, I think. They've got two pension funds there. These are little tiny pension funds. They're inefficient. Their investment returns are low. They're really opportunities for corruption as politically connected consultants reach their hands into these pots of money and pull money out for themselves.
Wait, I have to look up the word corruption. Stay where you are. Hold on. I've not heard that word before.
Yeah, no, in Illinois?
Yeah, I'm confused by it.
So you could consolidate those pension funds and not touch anyone's benefit. There's nothing even remotely, controversial from a fairness standpoint or unconstitutional about it. And that's the right, fair way to do pension reform. That's what I believe in doing.
I have two. I don't know which way to go here. Somebody's texting, and I think it's a good question. What is your view, your stance on recreational marijuana?
So I support the legalization of recreational cannabis. I'm a co-sponsor of a bill in the Senate that would do it right now, that's Senate Bill 316. And here's my view. You hear a lot of different attitudes, a lot of different reasons, pro and con. To me, this comes down to racial justice. Mm-hmm. We just do not see our cannabis laws applied equally in majority white neighborhoods and majority black and brown neighborhoods, and that's not right. So it's time to legalize it.
What do you think of Jeannie Ives' television campaign?
I think it's horrifying. You know, I think it's really, really offensive. And I think it's over the line. And I just don't think there's room for that. And I'll tell you what, when that TV ad came out, I thought, hey, this is going to be a good opportunity for Democrats and Republicans to come together and condemn it. Hey, Bruce Rauner should condemn that ad because, gosh, he's running against her.
Yeah.
And yet he wasn't willing to do it. And I think that's just a sign of how broken our politics are now and how, in an effort to play to a far right base, Bruce Rauner isn't even willing to stand up for his own campaign and say the right thing and do the right thing. Mm.
Well, it's very nice to meet you. Didn't know much about you. I do now. He's Daniel Biss, Illinois Democratic candidate for governor. Again, I bring up my son, Michael, who just registered to vote. I said, this is interesting. Senator Joe Biden might be running for president. And he's like, my son said, he seems like a great guy and everything, but I don't know much about him. And so I give our young voters credit for finding out way more information than I ever did when I voted. So good luck to you. Hey, it was a pleasure to meet you.
It was great being on here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's Daniel Biss, everybody, running for governor. We'll take a quick break. Some news is next and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Let's mosey on down to Bill and Wendy's fritter shop. You want some fritters,
yeah,
Bill?
Yeah, I would love just one fritter. I don't want to overdo it.
I can't stop at one fritter.
Is this Boxcar Willie? Who is this?
Johnny Cash.
Or Johnny? Oh, Johnny Cash.
Does he walk the line?
He does walk the line.
All right, you know what?
He does. It's the thing that you and Johnny Cash, you both dress in black, so you have that. And you both walk the line. So very similar, you and...
Is it the same line, or are they different lines? Or?
I think they're lines that are next to each other and cross from time to time. They kind of go in back and forth.
Serpentine.
Yeah, they serpentine.
Squiggly lines?
Yeah, squiggly lines.
Fine lines.
Yep. They're yeah.
By the way, I'm not wearing black. I'm wearing plum-colored pants today.
Are you in a game of Clue?
Maybe.
Wow.
I do want mustard-colored pants. And every time I look online, I giggle because I think of Colonel Mustard.
He's the best.
And Professor Plum.
Yep. Love those guys.
Goofy Grape. That's the color of your pants.
He was not in Clue.
We are getting out of the studio to have some fun. Steve, will you be joining us when we go to the Museum of... I know you've been there already, the Museum of Broadcast Communications, for the Saturday Night Live, the Experience event.
I haven't been told that I am, so I'm assuming not. When is it?
Next Wednesday.
Oh, I'll be in Mexico.
Oh. Wow. When Steve wants to get out of something, he goes all out.
He in our pool every time.
What? Why?
I'll be in Mexico. We're jealous.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll be fitting poor people with eyeglasses.
Oh, that is really sweet.
It makes you feel bad. Yeah. Very nice.
But enough about you. We are going to be checking out the Saturday Night Live, the Experience exhibit. Now, I know Steve's been there because I heard him on the air with John Williams when he was out there. Rowan, Anna, they've been out there already?
They have been, yes.
We were out there as well.
Yeah, we're the only ones.
Very cool.
Steve Dale's Pet World was out there. The Lutheran Hour.
Yeah, no one wants to go after
Man
the pet
Ferdini
world.
Was Ferdini.
Oh, man.
Dave Plyer was out there.
Save the best for last. What
can
we say?
The Northwestern Wildcats actually played there.
Yep, played a game against DePaul. Yep.
All right. Well, we're there a week from Wednesday. Next Wednesday, Feb 28th. Oh, it's not leap year this year, is it? So the last day of February.
Greg Jarrett was there. Mike McConnell. Ian Punnett.
A couple of the dead guys. God.
Yeah.
Stop it. Yeah. We'll be there from 10 to noon next Wednesday, and we're going to stream our bonus hour from noon to 1 p.m. as well. There are various sets there. There's the couch from Wayne's World.
Yeah.
And then original props. I believe there's Will Ferrell's cheerleading outfit, which was on loan because they needed it for Leslie Jones to wear. It's been all over. Also, I can't believe that the show comes together in just 6 days. We're going to find all that out. I'm really excited to go.
It's the main stage is there. You know,
the set,
which is so cool to see.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll be the musical guest, just me.
Oh, that'll be fun.
And you do the monologue.
All right.
We are going to have fun here. And listeners, you can join us, too, because we have tickets for you to come on out and join us, and you can tour the exhibit as well. We're going to have pie and coffee from Bang Bang Pie and Biscuits.
You should be Sinead O'Connor as the musical guest.
Do that. That'd be
good. Nothing compares.
Mm-hmm. Oh, when you tore the picture. That's
to you.
That's a very controversial one.
I know.
Very controversial.
Museum of Broadcast Communications located at 360 North State Street. And we need to bring people with us. We need to fill up the audience. So can we give away some tickets right now?
Let's do it right now.
We have been playing various clips from SNL, like audio bites. And when you hear them, you're the third caller at 312-981-7200. We'll still do that.
Uh-huh.
So if you hear a clip, go ahead and be the third caller, coffee talk.
Uh-huh.
Can we do coffee talk when we're there?
Yeah, it'll be fun.
So we'll still do that. If you hear some audio from SNL, go ahead and be the third caller at 312-981-7200. Or save that same number, 312-981-7200. Pick two numbers.
Caller 9 and caller 10.
All right, 9 and 10, you're coming with us.
312-981-7200, be caller 9 and 10, and we will see you a week from Wednesday at the Museum of Broadcast History. It's going to be crazy fun. I wonder, are we doing the show from, like, what they call home base, from that stage set?
Is from the Weekend Update?
Yeah. Well, you know, like, isn't the one that they do the monologue from at the beginning, isn't that shown there?
Or yeah, that's the main stage.
So is that where we're doing the show from?
Do we have to stand?
No. There will be folding chairs, I'm sure. Lawn chairs.
I'll do whatever.
Whatever they want.
I want to... I never come early, but I'm going to come early.
You're going to be there early that day?
I want to look a little around, and then afterwards I'm going to stay.
Yeah. Get your bearings.
Yeah, I might let the kids take the day off of school to come see it, because everybody's wanted to see the exhibit.
Yeah. All right. A week from Wednesday, everybody.
Sue from Rockford's going to join us. She's going to make the trip. That's caller 9.
Yeah. And then caller 10 is yet to be determined. Could still be you. 312-981-7200. Dial recklessly. Dial fast.
We have a lot of things to give away, Bill.
That's all right. Just really quickly, since Daniel Biss was just here, first of all, very, very nice man.
Mary Beth from Oak Park is going to join us, too.
She's number 10.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you a week from Wednesday. I always think, whenever I meet anybody who's running for office, and I kind of said this at the beginning, why? Why do you want the job? If somebody handed me the job, if somebody said, you don't even have to run.
They won't.
I know. I understand how the process works. But if somebody said, it's yours. You're the governor. Congrats. You start Monday. I would say thanks, but no thanks.
There is no way. First of all, you have a lot of responsibility, and I believe your hands are tied for certain things.
Yeah.
But I think the majority of people don't like you when you are a politician.
Isn't that true?
Yep. And you know I like everybody to like me.
I would go, then this would not be the job for you. I will go one step further. I don't know how in the future, and the future starts now, I don't know how you can run for anything if you've ever done one single bad thing in your life, because somebody will find it.
I haven't done anything.
No, you haven't.
Okay, that's true, but then you look at the president who...
has done a bunch of bad things.
That's only one office where it's okay, it seems.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like more things are forgiven now than used to be,
but
still get thoroughly aired.
Right, without a doubt. But, Steve, if you were running for anything, not even just president or governor, but if you were running...
For the bus.
For county assessor, whoever was running against you would hire some thug to find something that you did when you were 11 and go, look what he did when he was 11.
It's all personal.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I mean, when I was thinking about Daniel Biss saying... with Pritzker and all his money that he spent on the campaign. I mean, that's all we've known in the past is the more money you have, the more commercials. Because, I mean, I didn't know much about Daniel Biss at all until he came in. I heard his name. I'm going to do a little research, and I, you know, I hope your kids are too, which they're the ones that tell me, I got to do a little research on these candidates.
Right.
You have to.
Right.
But other than that, if somebody has money, those are the only people you ever hear about.
I would love to see.
It's not fair. It's not right.
Right. All right. So to that point, I would love to see a statistic. I'm sure it's out there somewhere. I just need to find it. Of in all elections, what's the percentage of the people who spend more money who win the election? I bet it's high. I don't know the exact number, and I got to find it. But I bet whoever spends the most money, more times than not, will come out the victor.
Well, because it's all, you know, getting the word out there.
Sure.
And, you know, it is different. Before, when we were growing up and around voting time, we really just had television and newspapers.
Yeah.
Now it's like you're seeing ads all over the internet.
Right.
It's way, you're bombarded now.
But you have, I mean, you owe it to yourself to fact check whatever you're seeing, because everybody plays with the truth just a little bit in these ads. You know, so it's one thing to see it, but it's another thing to digest it and say how much of that is actual and how much of it isn't.
There is so much hatred going on Facebook
in this studio.
Right now. No, for once not. Oh. But can we talk about the hatred on Facebook, though? We need to take a break.
Yeah.
But I'm just completely sick of it.
Yeah.
And people are just regurgitating facts they're hearing from someone else, and they're not... I'm scared to report on things I read on the internet now until I fact-check and make sure I found that information somewhere else.
Right, right.
Because you can find one story and run with it, and it's 100% not true.
Right.
There's so... It's
fake
news. Well,
we just had federal indictments about that on Friday.
I know.
Yep.
So if someone with an accent comes up and asks you to pose as Hillary Clinton in a cage, it could be a Russian.
Steve, can I still...
You know that happened, right? That's in the indictment.
Yeah. Can we still trust Yakov Smirnoff? Please tell me we can.
Please tell me we can. I think Yakov Smirnoff is actually working on behalf of the Belarusians.
Good.
So he's a little anti-Russian.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break and then more of this sort of behavior. Want to jump in? 312-981-7200. That's our phone line and our text line. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill. It's Wendy. And I just am so sick of Facebook sometimes.
Well, then you need to stay away from it. That's what I'm rarely on it anymore. Rarely.
I know.
Yeah.
I miss your funny posts.
No, it just, it got to be a hate fest. It really did.
Well, we have a show page that I try to answer people's questions. Mm-hmm. And
you go door to door once or twice a week.
Sometimes.
Is there anything you want to know from me? That's very nice of you.
I just like to help.
Sure.
I like to be accessible.
Sure.
But I am so sick of people wanting to hang on to their automatic weapons. There is a guy, Scott Papalardo. He has a Facebook page, I believe, with his wife, because it's Scott-Danny Papalardo, D-A-N-I.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's sitting on his back deck, and he's got an automatic weapon, and I'm paraphrasing, but he is telling people how he had fun shooting that gun.
Mm-hmm.
He never shot anybody. Or anything.
It's just strictly targets?
Yep. He didn't shoot any animals. He never killed anything, he said, but he loves shooting at targets, and he said it's a lot of fun. But after hearing the kids saying we're not protecting them anymore,
mm-hmm.
and after the Florida shooting with an automatic weapon, he said, you know what? I don't need this anymore. I know it's a small drop in a very large bucket, but I don't want to sell this. I could sell it on eBay and make $800 to $1,200. I could sell it back to a gun shop.
Yeah.
But I couldn't live with myself knowing that this gun that's in my hand, that was my gun, shot a kid.
Right.
So he goes to the back end of his deck and he takes a saw and he saws the gun in half.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, again, it's labeled my drop in a very large bucket, but maybe if I can inspire someone else to give up their automatic weapon, then I've done my job. And I applaud him.
Yeah, right.
Automatic weapons are a problem. And how can those still be legal? Does that mean that they're going to take away other guns from people if they want the right to bear arms? Automatic weapons shouldn't be had by anyone other than the military and maybe a specialized SWAT team or something.
Well, that's, you know, that's one of the big debates in all this.
It's disgusting.
What happens now? I can't wait to hear what happens. I think it's scheduled for Wednesday. The president has said that he wants to have a listening session
with
survivors
yeah.
of the school shooting. I'm anxious to see how
Me
that
too.
Goes.
And you know, listening and hearing are two different things.
Well, listening and hearing are two different things, and then acting on what you've heard is the biggest part of it. You can listen all day long, and you can nod and be sympathetic, but the next step is doing something. I'm so proud of the kids in Florida and around the nation who are saying enough of this. You know, we're the future, and we're not going to stand for it anymore. This girl, Emma Gonzalez, we were listening to her, over the weekend. Wow.
I call BS.
Yeah.
She calls BS on everything that is BS-able.
I don't have a snippet of it. You need to see it and hear it in its entirety, and it's about 11 minutes long. It's a little too long for us to play. Yeah, there are little sound bites that are effective, but you really need to hear it start to finish. Find it online. Her name is Emma Gonzalez. She was at the school. She's one of the survivors of the school shooting, a senior, who just, in no uncertain terms, says enough is enough. We have to do something.
She addressed a gun control rally on Saturday that they had in Fort Lauderdale. And I love that the children that need to be protected. There was this other kid who said, we're the children. You're the adults.
Right.
Do something.
Yep.
Do something to help us. And really, they go to school every day. That's all they can do.
Yeah. Right. All right, so a couple things. Number one, there was a gun show held over the weekend just a few miles away.
What, you were flexing?
Not that kind of gun show. No. That went on without a hitch. You know, you would think that just out of being sensitive to what happened, you know, a few days prior, whoever put this gun show together would say, you know, it's probably not the best time to be doing a gun show in South Florida. Didn't play out that way. They still had the gun show. Plenty of people still attended and bought guns.
Really?
Also, this is a story out of Huffington Post over the weekend. Missouri third graders are selling AR-15 raffle tickets for their baseball team.
What?
Yeah, I know. Children in a Missouri town are selling raffle tickets, offering an AR-15 assault-style rifle as the prize to raise money for their baseball team.
These parents are using these children. These children are just being told, sell these tickets. They don't care what it's for. They're just trying to sell the tickets.
I don't know how somebody doesn't go, this really is not a good idea. It's never a good idea, but the timing on it is so awful, you know? The rifle is the same type of weapon that was used last week in the Florida school shooting that had killed 17 people. The raffle was launched before the shooting by Levi Patterson, the coach of the team, for boys 9 and younger. Patterson said he decided to turn it into a positive thing after getting the hate in the form of angry Facebook posts about the raffle. The weapon was donated as a prize by a team father and co-founder of the NEOSHO gun manufacturer Black Rain Ordnance, which is currently pitching a Spec 15 AR pistol on its Facebook page. A Facebook user wrote, "Are we all tone deaf? AR-15 kills 17, so you raffle a gun for children's sports. Lord, people, wake the hell up."
I can't
believe this. So a combination of the gun show held in South Florida just miles away from the shooting and stuff like this, you just go, what does it have to take to open your eyes, you know?
And listening to Emma Gonzalez, and there was another kid who tweeted something and used the F word towards Donald Trump.
I saw that too, yeah.
And she apologized and said, sorry, you know, I was very upset. She doesn't need to apologize. And I'm also going to throw this out there. Whatever president was in office when this happened, I think they would be mad at. It's not just strictly Donald Trump. Something has to change.
I don't blame. You know, the other day when we had to go to his press conference, it was a mandate. Yeah. You had to run his press conference. So then we got a text saying,
it was
saying,
not a mandate.
Well, we were told.
We were told we had to.
The station chose to run it, right. And we were told we're running it.
So we got a text that said, you guys are just licking your chops, waiting to say something negative about Donald Trump. And I wasn't, and you weren't.
Nope.
And I don't blame Donald Trump for 17 people getting killed in a school in Florida. That's not on him. What I do blame him for is repealing an Obama gun law that would have made it harder for anybody in the future, somebody with mental illness, to purchase an assault weapon. That I do blame him for. I don't blame him directly by any means for the tragic loss of 17 lives.
It's not his fault.
But as a politician, you have to step up and say, Thanks, NRA, for giving us money in the past, but those days are over. We're not going to be in your pockets anymore. I think Emma Gonzalez said in her speech that he has now taken to the tune of $300 million in contributions. We read off a list the other day of politicians that were taking $2, $3, and $4 million from the NRA. That's insane. How do you answer to that? And you have to answer to that. You can't just put a tweet saying, I'm sorry this happened. I wish that it stopped happening, and our thoughts and prayers. Forget about that. That's all well and good. You got to do something about it, not just say something about it.
And that's where Donald Trump can help, too.
Right.
To make some changes.
Right. I would love, I don't like the guy. I can't stand the guy. I would love for, at the end of this listening session, for him to go, wow, this is a real eye-opener. These kids could have lost their lives. They've lost friends. America, I'm on your side. We're going to change these rules. Do that.
What happens when a kid of an NRA upper echelon gets shot at a school? What will happen then?
I wonder if that's happened. I mean, I know it's a numbers game, but I wonder. I wonder if that's the eye opener that you need.
What is,
I don't want
you
that
say,
to happen.
Wendy, what was it?
If one of the top NRA people, if one of their children was ever,
would you change your mind then? Then would you go, oh wow, I was looking at this the wrong way. I wonder if that's what it would take. I hope not, but I wonder. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We've got news next, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And we were trying to find out if the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School campus was open today. And from what I'm... They are closed. According to the Miami Herald, the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School campus will remain closed until Thursday. That according to Broward County Public Schools. Although Jasmine just called, and what did they say to you, Jasmine?
They have a voice recording that says they are closed until further notice.
Because we were talking about this. How do those kids go back to school?
For several reasons. Reason number one, you know, the tragedy of it all. And, you know, it's not the kind of thing that for most kids you could just, you know, put aside after a couple of days or even a couple of weeks or maybe for the rest of their lives. The bigger thing is being in that particular building is going to be extremely difficult. So what happens a lot of times is when there's a tragedy like that, as you know, is they demolish the building. You can't have it up anymore. It's just too hard, you know.
And there were plans.
Remember the theater in Colorado? There was a big debate because it was such a popular movie theater. And then the guy who went in and shot up, to, you know, prior to a film. So they were trying to decide, what do we do with this theater? Do we just wait a little while? And I believe they ended up just tearing down the whole building there.
You can't not think about it
right.
When you're in there.
Right.
And I did read that they are going to tear down one particular building of this Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School on campus. But as of now, the faculty will return first. It's unlikely students will return to the campus until at least the following week.
Yeah.
It is President's Day today.
Yeah.
So no
They'd
classes.
Have the day off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we were talking about it. It's like we didn't know. Is it closed for a couple weeks, a month? I mean, you can't not go to school.
Right. I would almost want. If it was up to me, yeah, the kids have to go back to school at some point, but you would hope that they'd be there'd be schools in the area that would take those kids in. I know that you don't want
3,000 though.
To
this
be
is a big school.
You almost have to spread it out among as many schools as you could possibly manage to do it, but to be back in that building after a very short period of time, it's not, you know, people always go, you know, if you fall off a bike, you got to get back on the bike. This isn't falling off a bike. This is much harder.
Yeah, but then do you not go out again? I mean, I don't know. I just feel sorry for these kids. It would be, I mean, as a parent, wouldn't you have a tough time sending your kid back to school?
Yeah. I mean, I would almost leave it up to the discretion of the kids. And I mean, a kid has to go to school. I get that, but... Even if it was a workplace, could you go back to a workplace where something so horrendous happened?
No, but ultimately you have to.
Yeah, I guess so.
And,
I guess so.
You know, that's what sucks.
Remember, I told you years and years ago, there was a house out in the western suburbs where somebody had died a very violent death. And we were looking at houses, and they told us, they go, here's what happened in this house. And I said to my wife, they're never going to sell this house. Everybody in this town knows what happened in that house. They didn't have any problem selling the house. But I would have had a very hard time. I mean, I wasn't there for it, but just knowing that something so awful had happened there on the property, that'd be almost impossible.
Yeah, that would be something that would bother me, and I couldn't live in it, but I'm sure that affected the price, and somebody wants a nice house.
It sold for more than the asking price.
What?
I know. I couldn't believe it either. I didn't think they'd be able to sell it at all. And then the real estate agent, we talked to the real estate, oh, yeah, we didn't have any problem selling it above asking price.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
The goal of the school is to allow staff to return to campus by the end of this week, according to Broward Schools. They said late Saturday night in a statement, which did not indicate when students would return. The school grounds have remained an active crime scene since the mass shooting, and to which the 19-year-old confessed to the shooting.
Yeah.
Building 12, where the killings took place, will be demolished and replaced by a building with classrooms and a memorial to those who died. But I don't know how quickly you can get in there and tear that down. School officials have not detailed how the building, where about a third of the student body had classes, will be replaced in the interim. And there is no word yet on, the only word we have is perhaps Thursday they may get back to school.
I imagine it's different for everybody. I imagine there are kids that will be fine going back on Thursday.
I don't know that. I mean, they may appear to be fine.
But that there's always some residual. Yeah. Sure. Sure.
Come on. That girl who was speaking, is it Emma Gonzalez?
Yeah.
She was saying of the students, you know, it's definitely post-traumatic stress disorder to even have seen anything.
Sure,
there's a horrifying video that a kid was taking on his Snapchat page of kids laying down in his classroom. I don't know if this was when a lockdown was first established, but he seemed to be kind of like, oh, wow, this is crazy.
Right.
And then you hear a bunch of gunshots, and then this kid who is taping it starts freaking out and uses the S word, and then people are now complaining, saying we can't let that audio go when people talking about Donald Trump using that word put it in the news. I don't know. We should have let that roll. This is, my kids watched it on their own. I didn't point it out to them, and I didn't know how I felt that they saw this video, but it's, you can't hide this.
Right.
They need to know what can happen.
Right. Have you followed the story of Johnny Galecki at all?
No.
All right. So Johnny Galecki, first from Roseanne and now from the Big Bang Theory, was being criticized heavily for his tweet that took place right after the shooting, where all he said was something needs to change, but people jumped on him. Here's the story really quickly. This is from therap.com. Johnny Galecki apparently made some enemies with his response to Wednesday's school shooting. The Big Bang Theory star took to Instagram, I'm sorry, I said Twitter, it was Instagram, on Friday to say that many people were outraged and threatened and angered by his call for change from the Florida high school shooting that left 17 people dead. In my last couple of posts, said Johnny Galecki, I have not suggested a single idea for new gun laws or background checks or even mental illness issues after the latest school murders in Florida. I only suggested change. That's all. He just said something needs to change. And yet many folks were outraged and threatened and angered by only that. According to Galecki, some critics of his response unfollowed his account, which he said is fine with him, while others suggested that he should pack his bags, which was less than fine for the actor.
What did he do?
He said that something needs to change. He didn't say we need tighter gun laws. He didn't say we need to do something about mental illness in the country. He just suggested that something needs to change.
Who doesn't agree with that?
Well, that's what he said. He said,
ugh.
Really, in all caps,
God.
You feel that zero change is needed. You hate and want me out of the country and belittle my opinion after three generations of my fathers served and gave their lives because I suggest it's shameful to explore taking a page from another country where children haven't been mass murdered in a school shooting in over 20 years. All he said was change, and people jumped on him. Hey, get out of the country with that attitude.
Listen, I understand there's a lot of anger going on. Again, I keep bringing up Emma Gonzalez. Please Google and watch her speech at an anti-gun rally that was going on in Florida over the weekend. But she, I believe it was she who mentioned when Donald Trump tweeted, you know, somebody should have seen the signs and said something. And her argument was, we did say something. We did try.
Right.
And so there's a lot of anger going around, but Johnny Galecki just saying something has to change because it does.
Right. Right. Who of anybody who knew what went on last week would go, I think things are pretty good right now. Let's not move anything.
See how volatile everything is now?
I know.
It drives me nuts.
All right. We will take a quick break, and then there's more show. On to happier things. Somebody butchered the national anthem. We'll play that for you. It's interesting. Well, that's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about someone who sang the anthem. I didn't think that badly.
Fergie, of Black Eyed Peas fame and solo fame, came out and did kind of a torchy version of the national anthem.
You usually like that kind of singing, too.
I usually do. I like her. I think she's got a really good voice. This didn't go real well, you know? She did that thing that you do sometimes when you're singing a song where it's a word that has one syllable, but you turn it into a four or five syllable word.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Why? I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, okay, she's a risk taker. She took a chance. Some of the basketball players, this was the NBA All-Star game, so they kind of intercut between Fergie singing and then your NBA stars. And it started out
covering
fine.
Covering their ears?
No, but you could tell a lot of them were like, what? You know, you just see the look on the face. And one of them toward the end, Draymond Green, he just starts laughing. And you know, the song is not supposed to bring laughter.
No.
It's not. I mean, if done properly, you'll hear the whole national anthem without a single chuckle. But toward the end, he could take no more. He just starts laughing. And there were several other players that they showed that just were, they seemed dazed. They just seemed like they needed to lay down for a little bit.
Do we have a little?
Yeah, we have it. I'm going to warn you, if you're driving, pull over, because you're going to get sick to your stomach a couple of times.
It's not that bad.
One of the basketball players tweeted that he needed a cigarette afterwards.
A cigarette?
I forgot who it was, but it was kind of funny. you'll see why.
All right, so here it is. This is Fergie over the weekend singing the Star Spangled Banner for your NBA All-Stars. Listen at your own risk.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
Wait, just hold on for a second. So at the beginning, she establishes that she's going to sing it that way.
Yeah,
and then you can't stop. Once you commit, you can't stop. You got to roll with it.
You don't go sexy with the anthem.
It's not the sexiest song in the world. It's not sexy.
All right. I listened to the middle. I didn't hear the beginning.
Oh,
now
yeah. So right out of the box, she's doing that yeah thing, and you just go,
but
wait.
But it's sexy. You don't do sexy, breathy anthem.
If she was in a jazz club at 11:30 at night on a Friday.
Still not singing the anthem.
You still wouldn't do, no, that wouldn't be your number one pick. You'd do something else, but not at the NBA All-Star game. It seems slightly out of place to me anyway. All right. So here's a little bit more.
At the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight.
Maybe, wait, Jess, hold on a second. Maybe Fergie was being paid by the syllable. I don't know if... Do they do that with singers at All-Star games?
It's
no?
Just the song.
It's a one-time fee.
Yeah.
You're not paid by the syllable. Okay, Jazz, a little more.
We're so gallantly streaming.
She got low there.
Yeah, she got very low.
It's red glare.
But you can hear within the song, there's little parts where you go, oh, she's back on track. She's back on track. But then she'll say, gleaming, like that. Was Liza Minnelli coaching her? I don't know who was coaching her. All right, more. Here comes. That's my favorite part because those are syllables that don't even. They're not.
I like that.
You like that part? She went off book. That's where Jermaine Green is. He's going, what?
Boy, she hit that one.
Yeah, nailed that one.
Is it live or Memorex?
Now, brave to me has always been a one-syllable word. Brave.
It's okay. Brave. She embellished a little bit, but...
There wasn't time for the game anymore. They couldn't play the game. Everyone went home. All right, let's take a quick break. Some news, and then Eric Zorn stops by. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, 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 the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
All hail King Zorn.
Yeah, Eric Zorn is here from the Chicago Tribune. And Eric, you were just saying, and boy, is this true. Since you and Wendy and myself all were in the same room together, a lot has happened.
My goodness. Yeah, it seems like, you know, every Monday I come in, I look at what happened the previous week, and it just seems like so much.
Were you in last Monday?
I was in last Monday.
So this was 1 week that all this...
In 1 week, all this news breaks. So, you know, with the terrible shooting of the police commander in the Loop.
Awful.
And then the mass shooting down in Florida. And, then the indictments, the Mueller indictments of Russians, and Donald Trump having a tantrum over the weekend over it. And man,
it's been an action packed week.
So much. I'll come in every day from now on, and we'll talk.
That's
about
the only way we can handle it.
The only way we can keep up.
Only way.
Otherwise, there's just too much. Right. I think you realize.
That's why time flies. Look at what happened in 1 week's time. Honestly, it feels like 3 weeks ago.
I know. There's so much going on.
Yep.
And yet, the topic I suggested for today has nothing to do with any of that. Is my dog? Yeah, I went away for the weekend, and left off Hazel at the neighbor's, and I just I gave him the food and gave him the leash and said thank you, and I just turned around and walked out. I don't say goodbye to my dog.
And the reason is,
well, the reason is I feel like, well, first of all,
you're
dog
mean.
I'm a cruel man. No, I love my dog, but and when I come back, I am affectionate to her and talk to her and so on, even though I realize,
do you use the baby voice?
Dogs, I try not to.
Thank
I really
you for
try
that.
Not to
thank
I really
you so much
speak,
for that
in a very,
I totally
in a
do.
Very
but the dog
way.
Might not
like,
understand
like Kent Brockman is all.
Hello,
like,
dog.
Like if you explain to Hazel, your dog, that you'll be gone for 2 days or 3 days, that might be lost on your dog.
I think everything about going away is lost on a dog.
You don't pet her and say, see you in a couple days, be good, I'll
I don't
miss
think
you.
I don't think she would understand that. I think.
But you do it for your own self.
Okay, well, that's a good point. You do it for your own...
I bet that's true. You
that's
do it more
why
for
I
yourself.
Do. I do it every day when I leave. Bye, Oogie Goosey. And his name's Tiki.
So I was thinking about this. I was thinking that my neighbors think that I'm a cold person because I walk out without patting or anything. Just like, I just walk out because I feel like this raises the emotional temperature. Dogs are really good at picking up on emotions, right? Mm-hmm. They pick up on everything, which is why they get so excited when you're excited. People say that dogs can sense death. Dogs don't know what death is. They have no idea what death is. But when everybody around them is freaking out or mourning,
or somber,
dogs feel that.
Yeah.
And so I feel like if a dog feels like I'm like there's some emotional moment going on, that'll raise her anxiety level, because I basically think that she's obviously a very simple being, and so if I raise her anxiety level, that'll make it harder for her to figure out what's going on. If I just like, I'm here, and maybe he's just walking out to the curb to get something and then coming right back.
Right.
And then
element of time is probably lost on most animals.
Bill is, I'm liking how he's thinking.
I think that's true. They don't know if you're gone a whole day or 1 hour. They just know, no one's here right now.
And my wife will say things like, we'll be right back.
I do that too.
What are you talking about? Be right back? She's like, well, let's see. Look at the clock. No, they don't understand time. So, but I, as I talk about this, I realize that it makes me sound like
a cold-hearted,
cold person.
Yeah.
So I put the question out there on Facebook this morning, and I got a lot of response. A lot of people do talk to their dogs, and they some of them say that the dog can actually, they feel that the dog understands. The dog knows the rituals.
There is something to be said, and it's the tone of your voice, obviously, because there are times where poor Tiki, I'll be like, oh, hello, Mr. Boosh. And Jim will say, Tiki, just suck it up right now. You're going to have to take the treatment, and it'll be over before you know it.
They don't have any idea what's going on for the most part, which is why, you know, I mean, so yeah, you say when you come home and they're excited to see you, then you reflect that back to them and their excitement and so on. I mean, that's all cool. But
is that excitement, because I always believe that excitement is, that's the guy who brings me food. That's the guy that brings me food. That's what they're excited about. It's and people sometimes mistake it for more.
Because there are four people in our family, you know, there's only one or two that feed him, but whoever comes in, he's excited. There's
change.
Yeah, there's somebody
here. They just like change.
They like people. I mean, I think they like people. They're
animals. Yeah,
I mean, certainly, Hazel, wherever we are, she wants to be.
Yeah.
So if we're downstairs, she's downstairs. She wants to be like between us if possible. You know, so
why?
So,
yeah, how come?
Just, you know, she's on the floor, but she just wants to be like really in the center of the action. Oh. She really feels that.
And, Wendy's got that going too.
I know. Well, look where she's sitting right now. Yep. So you know, you, when you have this going with dogs, but then there's this feeling like, should I be more paternal? Should I be treating them more like children?
No.
Well, there's
no.
Because honestly, you know, like a toddler doesn't understand time that well. But you always when you have the baby talk with them. Were little, you would talk. Yeah, we'll be right back.
But so, if dogs age, because noted pet expert Steve Dale has explained to us on several occasions that dogs rate at a 7-to-1 ratio to adults. So if you say, I'll be back in an hour, is the dog doing the math in its head going,
That's seven dog hours.
Right. No, the opposite. It's faster.
Oh, it's faster.
No,
that's right.
Longer.
No, it's shorter. Because their lifespan is shorter, so everything is sped up to the tune of seven.
But it's a bigger part of her life. Like, I'm going for a certain percentage of her life, I'm going to be gone. I mean, it's not a huge percentage. I tried to reach out to noted pet expert Steve Dale this morning, and I haven't got it.
I'm surprised he hasn't called you back.
Well,
give him a live snap.
I didn't have the number. So
we'll set you up.
It was a really bad reach out attempt, but, you know.
But your readers,
I'm afraid of what he's going to
have called you cold and calculated and awful because, yeah.
Others have said, yeah, why would you talk to a dog?
Well, to make it, Tiki cannot walk upstairs anymore. He's getting old, so we have to put baby gates at the bottom of the stairs. Oh. And when I go up to bed at night, I'm like, I feel really guilty because he would always come up and lay either on the bed or right near the bed, and I feel like I'm leaving him.
So
I'm like, good night, see you in the morning.
That day is coming for us pretty soon, I'm afraid.
And belly bands because of accidents in the house. I highly recommend those.
Man, this does not sound good.
But I understand people criticizing you because on several occasions, like if I come on the air, and I'm not a pet guy, I don't like pets at all, and if I say I don't like pets, and I'm also a cannibal, people will text in, you don't like pets?
Right.
What's wrong with you? You gotta like pets.
Don't care if other people have them.
People
think you're an animal hater, which you're not.
I'm just not.
Don't really want to share your abode with...
Yeah.
Although you have a bunny.
Yeah.
You have a bunny?
The girls have a rabbit that stays in... There is no... Like, people always go, you must have an electronic fence that cuts off where their room is. The rabbit stays in their bedrooms. It never comes out into any other part of the house.
And when the girls are away, who takes care of the bunny?
It has worked out. I have on two occasions.
Yeah, when everybody's gone.
And do you talk to the bunny?
No.
Never.
No, because we speak different languages.
I'm sure Bill feeds it going, I can't believe I'm even doing this here.
Even the rabbit looks at me when I bring in lettuce and goes, you, really? I'm shocked. I did not see this coming.
I'm pleased, but I didn't.
I thought it would have been anybody but you, and yet here you are with lettuce and a banana.
Who are you and what have you done with Bill?
Right. Like Very that. Strange. Okay. Eric Zorn is here. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Phil and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Eric Zorn is here. I got to talk to Eric Zorn like I talked to my boo-boo.
No. Nice to see you.
That's the thing is, so nice I wonder, because I've seen so many adults do that to their pets, and I wonder if even the pet is going, oh, please, anything but that voice, anything.
That's what Jim says, just suck it up, Tiki.
I'm 56 in dog years. Right. Don't talk to me like I'm a baby. Come on.
Right. The first 3 weeks of my life, I get it, but after that... All right. A lot of tragedy in the news, Eric. Right. You tell me, where do you want to start?
Well, one thing that's really been interesting to me is the reaction of the students down in Florida to the tragedy.
Very
at the
proactive.
School on Valentine's Day. And they are really speaking out. They're going right after the politicians.
Yeah.
This incredible young woman, Emma Gonzalez.
Love her.
Oh, man. She's really something else. She's, you know, and the other kids, too. I mean, they interview them, and they're very articulate. They're demanding change. They're demanding accountability from these politicians who take a lot of money from the NRA.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, I mean, every time something like this happens, I always think, well, look, if Newtown, would, you know, the Sandy Hook, the shooting of the 20 kids in the elementary school plus people on the staff, if that didn't do it, these first graders murdered by this nut with an assault rifle,
yeah.
That didn't do anything. Nothing changed at all there. In Las Vegas, nothing happened. And I get to this point of cynicism and despair. I'm like, well, this is just going to keep happening.
Right.
And we're going to put in more metal detectors at schools and maybe more armed guards, but that's all we're going to do. And then these people are going to find another soft target. But maybe this is a turning point. Maybe this is something
that the
students, the young people, are really
they're stepping up
here.
To the plate they to are make
not,
change.
Yeah, they're not letting, you know, parents groups and so on speak for them. They're out there really, really galvanizing. They've scheduled a protest for March 24th, I want to say. Well, would that make sense? No, March 14th?
I saw a couple of dates. I thought I saw March 24th where people are going to, kids are not going to go to school and they're not going to go back to school until changes are made, which that can't
No, they can't
be.
Do, they can't, I mean, that would be.
And then I've seen April 20th, which is the anniversary of Columbine.
It's the 19th anniversary of Columbine, maybe, something like that. It's not a round number.
I've seen
number.
Two dates. They have to.
But I think they have two, and I thought the one was going to be 1 month after, so that would be March 14th would be 1 month after. Mm-hmm. The shooting in Florida, so I'm not sure what the dates are, but you know, it's not for us, right? It's going to be for these for these students and teachers and stuff, and the teachers too. I mean, teachers were killed in this attack.
I know.
And teachers are tired of being vulnerable and going to school and not wondering whether they're going to come back and so on. I mean, so the idea that you're going to have this kind of mobilization, this kind of protest, I mean, it could be a turning point where you would start to see some of these measures enacted. I mean,
sure.
they couldn't ban bump stocks.
Right.
The thing that turns a semi-automatic rifle into an automatic rifle, basically.
This was after Las Vegas.
After Las Vegas. They couldn't do that, even though, you know, vast majorities of the public wanted it, and even though vast majorities of legislators said they were in favor of it.
Right.
They just couldn't do it. And so you're thinking that there've got to be some, you know, expanding these background checks, making some of these weapons more difficult to get.
What do you make of the argument that many politicians have made? I watched this Paul Ryan tape where every single shooting that's taken place over the last couple of years, they say to Paul Ryan, isn't it time to make some changes? And he always says the same thing. Knee-jerk reaction. This is not the time to talk about gun control. We can't talk about the restrictions now. Very insensitive time. Over and over and over again. And he's not the only one. There's been a couple of compilation videos of dozens of politicians this is not the time to talk about gun control.
Let's not politicize these deaths.
Right,
yeah,
right. So how can that continue to be used as an excuse?
Well,
it's the lamest excuse of all time.
And then shortly thereafter, too late, that's old news.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
It's like an avocado. It's not right. Not quite right. It's right. Nope. It's not bad.
Yep.
You know, no, it's really true that, and some people have been saying on social media, like, look, if I am ever shot, please politicize my death.
Yeah, talk about it immediately.
Fix it immediately. Right away. No, it clearly is the time to talk about this is now, and these students are demanding it, and this community
and
is demanding it.
Good for them.
Yeah, no. And
I'm proud of them, man.
And I'm a skeptic of a lot of gun control measures. I think a lot of things that are proposed are not going to be all that effective, but there are some things that I think we can do. And you look at what our country is like and the number of these mass shootings that we have all around the world. They're countries with tighter gun controls, and I know their constitutions are different, but they don't have this problem. I mean, countries like Australia do not have mass murders like this.
But why do people who want guns still want to fight for the automatic weapons? And then you say, you know, then they say, well, you know, the same thing could happen with a knife or a truck. It could kill. But a knife.
There's no stories of a kid walking down a hall stabbing 17 kids.
Not that quickly.
That's never
He's
happened.
Easier to apprehend. You don't necessarily die from a knife wound when you do with this automatic weapon. How can anybody be for that?
Well, first of all, they're not automatic weapons. They're semi-automatic, which means they fire with one pull of a trigger. So an automatic automatic weapon. You hold the trigger down on it. It's like a machine gun. Those are against the law. But this is what the bump stock turns.
And what's the difference then with the semi-automatic?
Well, the semi-automatic is what you just keep pulling the trigger. It goes as fast as you can pull the trigger, which is pretty fast. It is a little different in terms of its ability to cause mayhem. But you know what people will say is, well, you know, if you get rid of these assault style weapons, you can also have these semi-automatic pistols. You can have other kinds of guns that fire semi-automatically. And I think that when you talk about banning particular kinds of weapons, you know, that may not be the way to go about it, and it's going to run into some really difficult politics. But I do think that expanding these background checks, making it so that, I mean, I guess, you know, I don't have a real problem with law-abiding people owning guns. I don't own one, but I understand people, you know, they're for hobbies, for collectors, for self-protection.
I'm bothered by them having semi-automatic weapons.
I don't think you need that.
You don't.
But you're not, I mean, I'm saying, I mean, I think that's not going to happen. But what may happen is that we may really vastly increase the background checks, the access to weapons that these people have, that I think we really need to make sure.
But
that
this kid got it legally.
No, I know, but he shouldn't Vegas. Be allowed to. I mean, it should be harder. I think it should be more difficult. If you look at places like Japan, where you really have to jump through a bunch of hoops, you have to take training classes, you have to sort of,
right.
I mean, places like that, they don't have this problem. And so people say, well, I guess we got to have this problem because, and remember, this is the same country where Chris Christie put some woman, remember that woman who they thought might have, I forget what the illness was now, but
Legionnaires?
What was the one coming over from
Ebola?
Africa? And it wasn't Ebola. Something.
Bird flu?
Or maybe it was Ebola. Was it Ebola?
It might have been.
Anyway, they made her stay locked up in an airplane, quarantined her in an airplane. Right. They took away all of her liberties on the off chance that she might be, they thought she had this disease. So, you know, they are willing, in all these other cases, they're willing to spend billions of dollars to build a wall to keep people safe, ostensibly. Yeah. They're willing to take away everyone's civil liberties in order to keep people safe. But when it comes to making some sort of adjustments to our understanding of the Second Amendment, which means not everybody can get everything they want all the time, that this is such a difficult hurdle.
All right, so what you just said is the base of this. There's a selfishness. You mentioned it's a hobby for a lot of people, and I get that it's a hobby. I have a lot of hobbies, too. I play tennis 4 days a week. If somebody said to me, we have to take away tennis rackets. Mm-hmm. If you took away my tennis racket, you'd save 17 kids' lives, 17 kids that you've never met, but you will absolutely save their lives. I'd never pick up another tennis racket
again.
What
about action figures?
Same thing.
Same thing?
Same thing.
Wow.
If I knew it was going to save people's lives, even people...
You wouldn't fight it at all because you love tennis more than anything.
Nope. Wow. Absolutely not.
But you're great.
I think you can accommodate people who feel like they want a weapon for self-protection, people who are law-abiding people. I mean, you're never going to get rid of people using guns for crimes.
Go back to muskets,
you're
then.
They're going to have to get control of this somehow. And you know, and I keep saying nothing's going to change. After Sandy Hook, I said nothing's going to change. I'm not going to get involved in this debate again. It's just fruitless. But I'm having a glimmer of hope with the way these students have been motivated, activated, and so on, that there could be something happening. We could be at a moment. And
what do you think the result will be? Wendy and I discussed this a little earlier, but I want your take on it. Donald Trump said he's going to have a listening session on Wednesday. He's going to bring in some of the kids that were survivors from Florida and listen to what they have to say. That's just a PR move, isn't it? Nothing's going to happen after that.
It is, but you know, the thing is, one of the famous things about Trump is that he is very susceptible to what the last person said to him.
Right.
If it's on Fox and Friends.
And you know, the way he thinks, well, yeah, that's a possibility.
If they say it, then he'll nod and go,
how can
he
not listen to kids that are going to talk to him? Please, how can he not?
I think that he may, because he is sort of an impulsive figure, and he's been on record in some of his books and so on, he said. In the old days. I mean, right. So it's not like this is a foreign thought to him,
right?
So it is possible that he will have that impulse. Now he was reined in. I mean, he said some things about immigration too, and then the people around him reined him in, saying, "No, the base won't go for that."
Mr. Yeah.
Trump. So I don't. I think it's a good thing that he's inviting these kids in to listen. I think it's good for everybody to listen to this story. And I'd like to hear more from experts who really have an idea of how we can get control of this. We're never going to stop it.
Yeah.
But how we can make it less likely that the next disaffected teenager goes and buys himself an AR-50 and goes into a school and starts shooting people up. I mean, how do you make that less likely? And I think that to say, well, we need to enforce the laws we already have, or, you know, the
They're
mental,
not working.
Mental health is always like, oh, it's a mental health problem. Well, other countries have mental health doesn't stop at the Canadian border.
Right.
Canada doesn't have these problems. Why is that? It is a cultural issue. It is an access issue. And I'm hoping that we can make some progress while still defending the rights of people who want to hunt and who feel like they need a weapon for self-protection. I don't have a problem with that. So.
All right. It's Eric Zorn, everybody. He's in the Chicago Tribune. Read him there. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, appreciate it.
We'll take a quick break and then find out what Steve has on the Wintrust business launch. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.